Watch her. Watch that woman, yeah, watch her. I said watch her. Watch that woman now, yeah.
You're listening to Watch Her, a song from the Combustibles, one of the many bands that rocked India in the 1960s and 70s. In this episode of Crossroads, a podcast from the National's review section, we are taking a closer look at the Indian music scene of this time. First, we're speaking to Siddharth Bhatia, author of a new book called India Psychedelic, the story of a rocking generation. What kind of people were forming these bands? Was it mainly a youth culture movement?
These musicians were usually from English-speaking, westernized families, urban. They had obviously got access to instruments, access to records, access to radio stations. The Indian radio was not playing this kind of music, so they were listening to the BBC, Radio Ceylon, Voice of America. So I would say it was a small urban niche of young Indians. And they were, and I've said that in my book, they were people who had grown up listening to a different generation of singers, Frank Sinatra, Elvis Presley, musicals, and they wanted to move off from there. Their parents listened to jazz. They went to restaurants and listened to jazz over dinner, perhaps dance. It was a very formal scene. These children, when they came of age, when they were 16, 17, 18, did not want that music. So they moved away from this.
Some of the media reception to these younger bands was quite critical, wasn't it? And some of the more established media saw it. They criticized the music as sort of rebelling against their elders. Was this a case of a younger generation lashing out against what they saw as the conservatism of the country at the time?
Well, for a long time, the media didn't take any notice of them. And then around 67 or 68, some magazines emerged in Calcutta and Bombay, and they started writing about this scene. And there's, you know, of course, obviously also referring to that cover story in one of the most popular magazines, which said today's generation is against parents, against God. By that time, there was the drug scene had slowly started entering India too. Long hair, the hippies had come. So now you have a slightly different picture emerging. In the beginning, nobody took much notice, but when this happened, then they were seen as, the hippies also were seen as some kind of threat to Indian culture. And there were articles, there was also a couple of movies about hippies being, you know, all about drugs, which was obviously not true.
Who were the most popular bands during this time? Who would be the most popular ones that were performing in India?
So I would say it began with bands like the Jets in Bombay, and then the Mustangs in Chennai, but in those days it was called Madras. And then later, the best band, people have memories of the best band, the Human Bondage, Atomic Forest. In Calcutta, there was a band called Great Bear, High. So some of them had started writing their own songs. A few also cut albums, the Savages in Bombay. So these are pretty well-known names. And I must tell you that when my book was launched last year, I called a few of the old rock musicians and to perform in public at a nightclub. And the venue was packed, because people had memories of listening to these musicians.
Fascinating. Also in the book, you mention a talent contest called Simla Beat, where bands would perform using rudimentary equipment. So the whole scene seemed to have a real kind of DIY feel, didn't it?
Nobody had high-quality guitars. It was impossible to import them. So you bought them off hippies. Drums were, you know, rudimentary. The amps were made out of old valve radio sets. There were cases of people getting, you know, not electrocuted, but getting a shock while playing. So it was very rudimentary. There was no sponsorship. Simla Beat Contest came as a boon because it allowed you to expose your talent to a wider audience. And the winners the top five or the top 10 were allowed to make records. So that contest ran for 5 years, and it was pretty popular. Indian culture, popular culture, was dominated by Hindi cinema and Bollywood, as we call it today, or regional cinema, or Tamil cinema, or Bengali cinema. And no one could fight that monster. The record shops, which used to keep records of Western music, there was a small corner in some part of the shop, and these youngsters, Indian bands, could not find a sponsor to help them create an LP or a single.
Now we're speaking to Nissim Ezekiel, who played rhythm guitar with the Combustibles. What inspired you to join a band?
Yeah, well, look, my personal story is very simple and not uncommon to so many people from the mid-60s. I was at that time actually in Washington, D.C. I lived in the U.S. My dad worked in Washington. I was in D.C. Just months before the Beatles first arrived on the Ed Sullivan Show. And like many thousands of people, heard the Beatles and decided he wanted to be in a band. I made no progress in the U.S., but because I was there, the key point that influenced my joining the band, when I went back to India with my family late 67, 68, I took home with me good instruments. I had a Fender Stratocaster guitar. I had a wah-wah pedal, fuzz pedal, which Jimi Hendrix had made very famous by that time. I had a couple of good amplifiers. And you could almost say that the Combustibles, which existed at the time and reformed after I went back, those instruments that I took home with me were my passport into this established band when they made a personal change. So the equipment was an integral part of my story in terms of joining the band, but in terms of wanting to play music like so many others at the time, I heard the Beatles and the Ed Sullivan Show in Washington, D.C. in February 64. And that's 4 years before I played on a stage, but that's probably a good story. And well, from what I hear from the two founding members, George and Lionel Taylor, by the way, whose parents were British and stayed on in India at the time, just as an aside, George and Lionel first started, as brothers, started harmonizing to Beatles music. So I think that's probably not an uncommon story.
Okay, so in the book, Siddharth also mentions how the swinging 60s that swept the West barely hit India, because of it fought three wars in the 60s and it was a pretty difficult domestic situation. How did that affect the music generally in terms of your own band?
I would say this went on in spite of, rather than was in any way, there was no hurdle caused by those macro political and other events that Siddharth talks about. It's what is intriguing is that the scene developed despite the fact that it was so narrow. It was so focused on a narrow audience. It was to a westernized group. And yet there was no hurdle that we faced except that we weren't earning enough money and initially at least didn't have a lot of good equipment.
On that point, why exactly do you think it did emerge if there was a lot of challenges like that, like the audience was westernized and there wasn't a lot of money involved? What were the reasons for it evolving?
I think the driving force for 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds at the time in Bombay were probably no different than bands forming in the UK or in the US. It was music we loved. There was a chance to play. And now we had heroes to look up to, which, yes, there was Elvis and Cliff Richard in the 50s, but that was different. You had to be an Elvis or a Cliff Richard. Now, this is something you could accomplish if a group of people got together and they were decent musicians. So I think you were driven by the fact that it was possible to do it, and the number of bands coming out, certainly out of the UK at the time, meant this was something we could try and do. Nobody tried to be a Cliff Richard or an Elvis in India that I can ever think about. But come the Beatles, the whole scene begins to change as something that maybe we can actually do. That's kind of the distinction I would draw anyway.
That's interesting, because some of the newspaper reports of the time did have some articles that were critical of this Indian youth, as they called it, saying they were, you know, rejecting parents, rejecting values of the time, etc., etc. So you're saying that wasn't something that you did not experience, really?
No, honestly not. And I mean, I was there long enough, not just in the years that I played with the band, but then I was there since the mid-70s until I left, you know, to come to the U.S. with nothing to do with music. But I don't recall that kind of stuff. And, you know, Bombay, the Indian press was always pretty much saying and writing whatever it wanted to write. I think, remember, it wasn't such a big scene that it was in any way threatening to anybody. That's the other point one makes. You know, whether it's a minority community or some type of activity, generally, if it's not very large in some form, it is not visible enough to cause anyone to be agitated by it. You know, it has its own it moves along, it does its thing, it has its audience, and it doesn't bother anybody. We certainly didn't bother anybody. So all I'm saying is I don't recall any great surge of writing articles, critical articles. There may have been an occasional reference here or two, for sure. But we weren't big enough to be, the music scene of this one wasn't big enough to be really threatening in the form that anyone would bother. And so those who liked it, liked it. And those who didn't like it, it didn't affect their lives very much. You follow? And remember, no internet. TV just in Bombay, even then, TV just coming, it was just starting. It was all government. There was no private. So there wasn't much exposure of this in terms of what you were watching on your TV or your internet. So those who didn't know simply didn't know. Simple. And yeah, I walked around with long hair and so did a few of others. And the modern girls in the colleges and all were dressed somewhat differently than the others. But hey, it was cool. Didn't bother anybody then. It's kind of different now, interestingly. With progress, we've gone backwards somewhat.
Fascinating. Just one last question. You live in the U.S. now, so I mean, how do you look back on this time, the music and the scene of India of the 60s and 70s? What's your own personal take on it?
You get these strangers writing, you know, you played at this cool dance in St. Mary's High School in the Baikala suburb of Bombay in December 1968, and we were there with our friends. And, you know, it was a boys' school, but the girls were invited, and we all were very excited. The fact that we, having a lot of fun in those days, serious fun, would have this kind of impact on people who write to us 45 years later, I think, to me, that's the difference that time has made. That at that time, it was a lot of fun. We took the music seriously, but we didn't take life very seriously.
To read our review of Siddharth's book, visit thenational.ie. We'll leave you with another Combustibles track called Some Peace of Mind. Thank you for listening.
Some peace of mind.